Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the It's All Possible Leadership Podcast. I am super excited today. It's taken me ages to get this man in front of a microphone, although he does get in front of a microphone a lot, just not with me, but I finally got him. And would I like to welcome Mr. Darren Finkelstein to the show. How are you, Darren?
I'm great, Rob, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Mate, it's been too long, hasn't it?
It has been a while. I'm just trying to think of how long it's been through our connection. What do you reckon? How many years?
Oh, mate, well, it's been a while. We actually, now, the real secret here, ladies and gentlemen, is that Darren and I came together and actually were work colleagues at the wonderful Apple Computer together in Melbourne. So we were brought together under exciting circumstances in the office in South Bank, Darren, if I remember.
I do, yes. South Bank Boulevard, just above the Jaguar dealership, wasn't it?
It was back those days, yeah. It was good for you and I to get down there at lunchtime, but to check out and get some aspirations going.
Yeah, correct.
And, now, the other thing, we've also had some great connections since then, and of course, because we've both got a huge passion for boats and boating and the like. So that's been a huge part of your life and a big part of my life as well. But you know what? I was surprised what would bring us together again. It was all around accountability, and you are really Mr. Accountability now, Darren. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, thank you, mate. I'm trying to own that space and really trying to establish leadership and direction in that area, because it's so good if we can get that sorted as business owners.
Oh, I'm 100% with you. Hey, so let's get into this. Now, this is called the It's All Possible podcast. So we first of all ask all our guests, first question is, what does the word possibility mean to you?
Oh, I love that word. To me, it means limitless, right? It means that it's so exciting that there's no end. We can set our course ourselves. And to me, I get really excited hearing that word. But a lot of people, I guess, would have a different take on it. So I'm an optimistic guy. I see it's a brilliant word.
Yeah, I love it. I love possibility because it does have that kind of what, there are no limits to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I think what I really like about this, and I was thinking about, you know, the connection between possibility and accountability, to me, is that accountability allows you to take possibility into probability.
Yes, exactly it. And take what appears to be something limitless and make it what you will of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's all about how you then make that exercise happen.
Yeah, and I've sort of put the definition together around possibility. It's where, to me, where opportunity and optimism come together.
Yes,
you
know, yes,
you have optimism,
yes,
but an opportunity pops up, you've got to do something about it. And
absolutely,
take action.
Absolutely. So, and the fact that it may happen, the word possibility, to me, also says it may happen. So hang on, this is real. Okay, yes. So what do I now need to do to make that real?
Yeah, to increase the probability. I love it. And Darren, you've always been a passionate guy, and I'm passionate about the things we get involved with as well. And which wasn't any surprise, we're at Apple, which you had to be passionate when you're at Apple. What did you love about Apple? What did you join Apple at the time?
Look, I loved Apple because I really felt like I was part of a team. I really felt incredibly proud to work there. I got a chance to work with wonderful people, and you and I had made our connection there first. But everybody that worked there was passionate about it, so we all shared the same love.
Yeah.
And everybody had the ability to be themselves and not try and be something, a corporate clone. And that's what I loved about Apple.
I really liked that you had to be passionate because we were evangelists in those days. It wasn't as popular as the brand is today, isn't it? We had some tough gigs. And one of the things I remembered about you, Darren, why I think the accountability side is so important, is that, you know, you did some great what I call strategic win-backs. And I talk about it to this day, I don't know if you know that. But you know, one of the great cases of yours was, you know, the win-back of BHP to me. The way you were so accountable, it was an account that was pretty much dominated. Apple had kind of lost their way in there and had lost the account. But you really went to that with not only just passion, but actually a strategy. You had accountability. And, you know, over a period of time, we took the long-term view, which was another thing Apple did quite well. And I think Steve Jobs was such a legacy in helping us do that, take the long-term view.
Yep.
But it was, if you didn't have the accountability and kept yourself accountable through that process, there's no way that account would have been won back. And I just thought that, as I said, I speak to many salespeople now and leaders today and talk about that. And I quote that exact example.
Wow.
Because you set the standards back then with that.
Yeah, look, thank you for that. I felt, though, that at some, I appreciate absolutely the words you've said, that means a lot, Rob, but I understand that we didn't get a lot of support from leadership at that time. And I'm talking of worldwide sales director who,
yes,
you know, marched into the BHP corporate office, and I write about it in my book, and basically said, yeah, we're here to support you. Well, we're being, you know, Microsoft suing us. We're suing Microsoft. Everybody can get stuff, basically. How in the hell do you win back a corporate account on that basis?
Yeah, and the behaviour and the rhetoric didn't match, did it?
No, it didn't. And, you know, leadership needs to take accountable or take accountability, and that's a great example of where if you aren't all on song, the fish rots at the head. If it doesn't start at the top and filter its way through an organisation, you haven't got a hope in hell. Doesn't matter if you're a great strategic sales guy and you really understand how it works. Everybody's got to be on song.
Yeah, I love it. Darren, yeah, that's another thing for me. As I came through and spent time in, you know, corporate sales and a lot of things we did at Apple, then I was at HP and a few things after that. Yep. One of the things I've developed over the last, I think the last probably 15 years, people say to me, yeah, Rob, what's the secret to success? You know, what's the silver bullet to when big change happens or transformations happen or you get a movement happening? And I said, I can tell you now what it is. There's three things and you can't miss any one of the three, right? And they're leadership, which you just mentioned, yep, accountability and discipline. And yeah, discipline doesn't mean in terms of disciplining you like a school thing.
No.
You're in the rhythm. We meet on Monday or we review on Wednesday. We do this on Friday. Yep. That's what I mean by discipline. And I've said, if you have leadership, accountability, and discipline, it happens. But if you miss any one of those out, it's either short-lived or it doesn't get traction.
It's not going to, exactly. And that's why most of the time these things fall apart in organisations is because those three elements you talked about don't all come together as one. And everybody in the organization, doesn't matter what level you are, has to be living and breathing those three things.
Yes, yes.
Because everybody has a role to play in that exercise.
Yeah, it's really interesting. In fact, some of the podcasts I've done earlier, Darren, with some real big leaders who've done some big strategic moves, like global kind of transformations. One of the interesting things I said, and I remember talking to one of them, Ritu Marish in Singapore, and I said, so what, you know, what were the metrics? And she goes, here's the thing, Rob, you just have one. You just have one. She said, do you have any more metrics?
Yeah.
She said, we do look at dashboards. But she said, you have one. What's the big single metric game changer that we have to be accountable for?
Yeah.
And everyone, because I have people coming to me going, oh, what a great, this great idea. And she'd go, how's it affect that metric that we all signed up for, right? To your point. We all signed up for this metric. Oh, yeah, it affected negatively. We're not doing it, right?
Yep.
And I was doing a case study recently with DHL when they went from just billions of dollars in the red and came back to be positive. And I was talking to one of the leaders. And I said, well, what was the transformation? He said, one of them, we focused on EBIT. EBIT was our metric. And the EBIT went from the global CEO in the US right down to when we had meetings, you know, in the ports of Melbourne.
Yes.
It was, how does this affect EBIT?
Yes. Everybody's
That's really hard to do, isn't it? To get the one metric and you had to be accountable to them. Everyone was held accountable, including their remuneration, I think, to the metric.
Wow. That's how it needs to be. And what an amazing success story that is.
Yeah.
But it's hard to get individuals in organizations at every level to buy into that.
How do you do that then, Darren? Because it is hard, I agree. What are some of the ideas you've got in strategy?
So Rob, I predominantly work with entrepreneurial business owners. So I'm saying to them, it starts with you. So you take forget about what everybody else is doing. You literally set the example. You lead the pathway. Take us to the promised land and you'll get everybody wanting to join you on that journey. And that's about communicating. And it's about communicating at every level, whether it's, you know, your sales teams and having a strategic plan. It's your marketing to make sure that they're answering the questions that the clients or prospects want to hear. Whether it's admin, roles in admin are so important that those important people get a buy-in to that overall plan. And communicating is the way to do it, is to sit down with people and explain where you're taking them and why it's so important, why we need to be there, and what the role that individual plays in taking you there.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it gets right back to that so much focus I see on the what. This is what we're going to do. Rather than, hang on, let's peel the onion back here. Why are we doing this? Here's why we're doing it. Here's how we're going to look at doing it. And here's what I need you to do.
Yeah,
you just explain that to people. I think it was Patty McCord at Netflix said it well. She goes, you know what, Netflix, we just want to treat people like they're actually grown adults. We want to hire fully formed adults, not children. Right?
Not children.
And we're going to treat them like that. So we're going to tell you how we make money. And we're going to tell you what your role is in this. So when something goes wrong or we need you to do something, you can come back to that why, because it'll make sense.
Yep. And there's lots of organizations that don't get the why bit right. So management, you know, the management team and their executive, you know, they, in the old days, we used to go and have offsite meetings and we go into a fancy hotel and come up with a strategy for 4 days and off we go. But we don't explain that why to people. And that's kind of what they feel like as a team member. They feel like they're being told they need to do something rather than explain why it's so important for all of us and be able to implement on that.
And Darren, I find entrepreneurs are the worst at it, right? I find entrepreneurs and business, including me included, by the way, I'm going to throw myself under the bus here, are terrible at it, because what's happened is, and I call me out if I'm wrong here, but what I find happens is you've thought about it for a long time, you've got your why sorted in your head, and you come along and you go, right, this is what we're doing.
Yes.
And you're telling them, but you know, I'm physically there in a physical form, Darren, but my head and mind is already in the car going to the airport.
Correct. Right? Yeah, you're on your way home.
I'm not even, it's some sort of form is left there. I've almost cloned myself. Yep. And I've forgotten that it took me 3 months to come up with the why and the how and the what, and I'm just delivering the what. And you go away, and all of a sudden your team are going, they still haven't done anything in a week. And you go, what did you miss?
Yeah.
And the why, that's what they missed.
That's exactly right. It's a bit like, you know, it's like a Homer Simpson's episode where, you know, something important's happening and Homer's thinking donuts. You know, he's just not even, he's not there in the moment. He's not present.
Yeah.
And and that's, you know, that's sadly where it all falls apart.
Well,
it's been able to. Sorry.
I was going to say that the leader, I was going to say though, it's when you cross, and I'm sure you coach to this, but when the leader finally works out, actually where I get really big scale is not trying to do it all myself and involving my team earlier on in that early days decision-making.
Yeah.
I've just come across a fantastic book by Dan Sullivan. If you've never crossed Dan Sullivan in the US.
Yeah.
And Dan, who, you know, coaches a lot of entrepreneurs, but he's got this great book called Who Not How. Right. And who, not how, is when you think of the idea, don't think how you're going to do it. Think who can help you do it, because they think differently and they'll be faster. And therefore, now you've got scales, not only just you, it's a bunch of other people.
Yep.
I think that's what I see anyway with entrepreneurs. When they really hit the go button, they've moved from them doing everything to actually someone, I've got to get people involved in this.
Yeah, exactly. Because what that does is everybody comes to the table with a little bit of baggage somewhere along the line, and they, it stops them. The things that have happened to them in the past stop them from being able to look at something with an open mind and address that. So I come to the table, I'm all negative because something happened to me 10 years ago and I didn't like the way it turned out, so I'm not giving it my all. But you're bringing a whole lot of people in with different perspectives. They're excited, they're motivated, they understand the why because you've explained to them that at the beginning, and then we're all off together.
I really like that. Hey, you know, one of the first things I see get confused, and I even saw it this morning from a fairly high profile guru out there on the interweb. What's your definition, the difference between responsibility and accountability?
Because
I see
good question. They're cousins, right? They're cousins. They're related, but they're not the same. So we're responsible for things. We're accountable to people.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So that to me is what the definition is. Give you a really good example. If I was to say to you, Rob, tomorrow morning, you and I are going to meet at the gym. We're going to get there at 7 o'clock. We're going to do a workout together. And I am probably saying, why do you need to go to the gym? You're in such beautiful physical condition.
True.
But we agree we're going to do that tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. Yeah. So I'm now responsible for turning up at the gym because I've made a commitment to you.
Yeah.
And you're going to hold me accountable if I'm not there. I'm letting you down. My responsibility is to take on that task that I've agreed.
Yeah.
So that's how we, you know, it's like driving a motor vehicle. At the end of the day, we're responsible for obeying the road laws. I'm responsible for, I'm behind my wheel of my car, so therefore I'm responsible for everything that takes place.
Yeah.
The police, the law is going to hold me accountable for that.
Yes.
And when I transgress, when I don't do what I said I was going to do, when I didn't make, I didn't adhere to the road laws, then they are going to come down and I will face the full brunt of the law.
Yeah.
That's a really good example of the difference between responsibility and accountability. You can't be accountable to things. Accountability is people. It's me looking at you and eyeballing you and saying, Rob, when are you going to do it? You said you were going to do it and you didn't.
Can you be accountable for a result?
You can be accountable for a result. You can take the responsibility on of achieving that result. And I'm going to be held accountable to my management, to my board, to my shareholders, to whomever. So, yes, ultimately you can be.
Yeah, but you're still responsible to a person for that result.
Yeah, of course. It's, you know, the board is made up of people. The board is not a machine.
Yes.
Well, some people may say it is, but it's actually a physical interaction between people. So
there's still people there. Hey, the other thing that's interesting, and even that description you gave it about, you know, being accountable to the, you know, to, for driving our car and the police will hold us accountable. You know, one of the things I look about the word accountability, some people associate it with being negative or being hard work. You know, they see leadership as it's exciting and it's up there. But accountability is like, oh man, it's got to be accountable. It's hard work. It's discipline. It's the effort.
Yeah.
But actually, I find it empowering. When you decide to become accountable, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, mate, this is my thing. You got me on my soapbox now. The thing with accountability is we read about it, we hear about it. It comes into our world when somebody's transgressed. It could be a sporting player who's done something absolutely inappropriate, and it's on the front page of the newspapers, and people want a head. They want to hold that person accountable. It could be a politician which does that sort of stuff, you know, on a regular basis. People want a head to be able to parade through the streets, a bit like where in the old days of Rome at the Colosseum. Here is the victim, or here is the perpetrator, and he's, you know, being carried through the city. That's where we see accountability. But people don't know that accountability is, it's a superpower. It's what I've got, you've got, everybody's got the ability to tap into, turn on, and get extraordinary results. But the sad thing is we only hear about the negative side of accountability, not the enormous positives that it brings.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, and something I teach a lot about is on communication is actually, are you rewarding your people? Are you having rewarding conversations? Are you congratulating someone for being accountable, you know, for being accountable at the result which they delivered?
Sure.
And, you know, I think it's Stephen Covey says, you know, you should look at it's a 5-to-1 ratio, like five great words to kind of, you know, build the emotional bank account, so you can have a, you know, the one negative one, or you got to call someone out, or you got to, you don't tolerate bad, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah,
it's like a 5-to-1 ratio. I find that sometimes flipped.
Totally. And the thing that also I find a lot in organisations is, you know, for us to achieve a specific task, it takes a whole lot of little milestones, a whole lot of little wins on the way. We can tick that. You know, as I caught myself, tick those boxes, my business name. We tick little boxes on our journey towards completing that task.
Yeah.
We need to celebrate and reward ourselves when we completed each one.
Yeah.
But people don't. People just tick that off in their head, and they're moving on to the next one before they've had a chance to think, to reflect, to kind of get some feedback, to fine tune, to have a break and, you know, do something to clear their mind so they're ready in a good place to start the next milestone.
It's interesting you should say that, because the one of the books I'm a big fan of is a book called The Leadership Challenge. And they've there's a lot of great content in that book, but there's two things I identified where people find their leader more effective, right? And one of them is that they call out bad behavior that's affecting the rest of the team early. And the second one was they celebrate the small wins, right? So they actually acknowledge them and celebrate the small, just the big ones, but the small tick of the box.
Yeah.
They notice that little bit of improvement, that little bit of the way on the journey, that little bit of extra, the little KPI, the little one we decide that's on the pathway to celebrate, acknowledge it and celebrate it. It's huge.
100%. And you know what? As human beings, we respond wonderfully well to positive reinforcement. You know, that's a fact.
Yeah.
So if we can start celebrating those little wins along the way, we build momentum.
Yep.
We start to feel ourselves turn it into a positive experience.
Yeah.
So it's no longer trudging.
We're celebrating accountability, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. We should see more of it because you know, generally, 90% of people are accountable. They actually are. They kind of are good people, but sometimes they haven't got the rules set in front of them.
I think, Rob, though, that and one of the reasons why I built that quiz behind me that says, are you accountable? Take the quiz to find out. Most people think they're accountable, but the reality is, and I'm so sorry to say this, they aren't.
In what way aren't they, Darren?
Because people don't have frequency in what they do. So the secret, I think, one of the secrets in accountability is to have frequency of contact, is to know that, Rob, I'm holding you accountable for your task. So you and I are going to meet every Monday. We're going to meet every Monday at 3:00. Is it in your diary, Rob? Great, it's in mine. I'll see you every Monday.
Yeah.
So you then start thinking during the week, I'm having that meeting with Darren, having that session. I need to complete the things I said I was going to do.
Right. So that's the discipline part of what I call leadership accountability discipline. That's the discipline part that makes the accountability so much easier. It makes it happen.
Yeah, and it makes it happen so easily. And it's not a stress. It's not like we're cramming for an exam tomorrow, so therefore I'm staying up all night tonight to do the task for Darren. If you choose to operate like that, then so be it. You'll still get the outcome you want. You'll just be a bit more wrecked at the end of it.
Yeah.
But it's about that frequency, because we're juggling lots of balls in the air every day, okay? Mm. We're trying to keep all those balls flying around at one time without falling on the ground. And that squeaky cog gets the oil. So that little item that comes up becomes an issue with a client that's a problem or something internally. That all of a sudden gets thrust in front of us as executives, as managers, as senior people. And what happens is the other things we set out to do get pushed to the bottom of the list.
Right.
Sometimes they drop off.
Yep.
So most people just don't know how to balance that, and that's why that they think they're accountable, but they're actually not. And it's not hard to make that change, that difference.
Hey, let's talk about that, because you talked about in the book a lot of people about how we get overwhelmed on a daily basis, and you just gave some great examples. You've got what I call a 5D approach, which I really love. Can you take us through what the 5D approach is?
Sure. So, look, people do get overwhelmed. And overwhelm is one of the reasons why people don't get shit done. People don't get stuff done is because they feel like they can't make a start. And because they don't feel comfortable about where to start, they actually don't do anything. So then it becomes procrastination. And procrastination is the biggest destroyer of self-belief. Because as a result of that, I'm feeling shit. I'm feeling lousy. I can't make a start with this exercise. So really, there's a couple of ways we can address that. And my 5Ds, the first one is to do a task. Agree that I'm going to do it? Great. So when can I fit it in my diary? Let's make time and I'll just get it done. I'll tick that box once I've completed that exercise. The next thing to do is to be able to go, okay, I can't complete this task because I don't necessarily have the skill set for it or the interest for it. It's not my shtick. It's not my thing. I'm not passionate about it. I don't have time to do it. I'll delegate it to somebody else in my team who has that passion, who's looking for that experience. Maybe they've got a special interest in that area. Maybe they're just able to help me out with a task that I can't do because I'm snowed under. So you can delegate that. You can also delay it. Remember, someone else's priorities when they ask you to do something aren't necessarily yours.
Mm.
And so it's really important to be able to delay something until it's the right time for you.
Yeah.
The other D is to delete it, to go, hang on a sec, I just can't do this now. This is just not for me. I'm going to say no. And we all, as humans, struggle to say no.
Mm, agree.
Which we really find that difficult to do. And the last D is that when they all get stuck with it, the fifth D is to come and ask Darren, get an accountability coach, and I'll sit down with you and we'll work together through that exercise. So they're my 5Ds.
I love the 5Ds. John Maxwell, the great leadership guru I had the privilege of studying under for a number of years, he had a great one when he was he took on a new leadership role, and they said to him, he looked at the tasks and there was all these tasks, and he goes, and the first thing he asked is, do I need to do this? Well, no, they said, well, not necessarily. And he said, the second question is, does anybody need to do it? Like, in other words, has it expired? Like, is this something you've been doing because that's the way we always do things around here? And I think that's a really powerful one, isn't it? So one, do I have to do it? But does anybody have to do it? Or
Yes. And that is where someone else has told you to do something, and that why hasn't been shared, and that why isn't consistent with our end goal or consistent with our strategic plan or our KPIs, etc. But the other thing is, and Warren Buffett talks about this, and I write about it in the book, Warren Buffett basically says, go and find the top 25 things you need to do in your business and write a list of those. Yeah. So we sit there and we write 1, 2, 3, 4 and paper it out. And we got our list. We're really proud of that. And then he says, okay, get the list and rip off the top 5 of those things. And the other 20 of them, chuck them in the bin. You're never going to get around to those, and just deal with the 5 most important things.
Yeah, isn't that great?
The 5 most important things that are connected to our why.
Yeah, the 5
connected
ones.
Connected to our purpose so we stay on track.
That are really on track. Yeah, I love that. Well, you kind of joked about a second when you had your last D. When does someone know it's time to get an accountability coach?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. usually I find that people like the idea of they need to be held accountable. They actually know that they can do the task. And you touched on it before. Getting accountability coach and being accountable is not a punishment. Mm. You're not going to session with Darren every Thursday because you've been a naughty boy, Rob, and you didn't do what you said you were going to do. You're doing this so you can juggle more balls in the air at once. And it's like a professional sports person. They all have coaches. Every professional golfer has a coach. Every footballer has a coach. Under 14s have coaches. So being able to learn by someone else's experiences, who's, and you know, as an entrepreneur, I've been there and done that. I've walked this road before. So they're getting a different set of eyes that are focused on the end goal. And someone who's not emotionally connected to that world you're in, bringing an outsider's perspective is a wonderfully fresh way to do that exercise.
Yeah, I love it. I had an accountability coach told me a great story. He said, I asked three questions of the people I'm coaching. The first one is, let's catch up on what you said you were going to do last time to where you are now. Yeah. And the second question is, so we get our progress how we were last time to now. And second question is, how are we going on those big picture ones that you're still working on, but let's check in on with that. Yep. And the third question is, have you lied on any of your answers for the first two questions?
God.
And he said, it's the third one that people go, you know, I might have just...
put a bit of mayo on that.
Just updated that first, yeah. You do. That's a great question, isn't it?
It is. The other thing is that people, we all need to have, you know, big, hairy, audacious goals. We all need to have that big picture we can focus on, where we can think possibilities to the nth degree. What does that look like in that place I want to go to or that place I want to be at?
Yeah.
And what don't, where am I at now? And what don't I have? What skills don't I have? Where can I find those skills? And how can I make that BHAG, that big, hairy, audacious goal, how can I make that happen?
Right.
And business owners don't spend enough time playing in that area. And that is absolutely sad because they're going to end up having regrets. Mm. They're going to wish they could have done it differently. They're not going to really maximize their opportunities where they are today.
Yeah.
So I love working on big, hairy, audacious goals. So you want to do that? Great. How do we do that? What does that look like?
That's why I think attitude and mindset, just to me, when I was writing the It's All Possible book, I didn't actually have it in there originally. And I write the first half of the books on attitude and mindset, but it actually was never in there. And the reason it was never in there is because, because of the kind of elite sport I've done and business people I hang out with like you already had it, right? But what I discovered, most people don't. And if you haven't got a good positive mindset and your attitude's right, with a growth mindset and a positive attitude and optimism is not strong in your life, then what happens is that the vision is really small.
Yep.
And, that doesn't benefit anybody.
No, you sabotage your own idea. You sabotage your own plan. And one of the things in accountability, which is so key, Rob, which ties this together, is when you've got a great idea, when you've got a wonderful possibility and you think this is real, the average person, in my experience, does not want to share that desire and that dream with others.
Mm.
So they don't tell people they're going to do it.
Right, yeah.
Because in case they fail.
Yes, yes.
Where is that at? That is self-sabotage of the worst order.
It's so common though, isn't it?
Let me give you a really good example. I remember when I wrote, remember my boat book I wrote, Honey, Let's Buy a Boat? I started writing that during my 49th year of age.
Right.
And I was writing that book and I decided that what I was going to do was having a 50th birthday party and there was 150 of my nearest and dearest there and I decided I would tell everybody I was going to write the book.
Mm.
I got the obvious call-outs from the crowd going, hey, how can you write a book you don't read enough of them and you're only good at looking at the pictures. Most of those were from my own kids, I might point out. But what was really interesting...
Very perceptive of your children. I've always said that, you know that.
Absolutely accurate. They know their dad well. But the point is this, right? That when I got up there and I told 150 people I was writing a book, people want you to be successful. So what that does is they then start to support me in that process. So every time after I saw them, it would be, how are you going with the book? Where are you up to today? What's your chapter count like? How's your word count? What is the hardest part of the book? And people wanted me to be successful. And the more that did, what that did was spur me on to want to complete the book and therefore deliver, and they're holding me accountable for it.
Yes.
Because I put it out there, I made a big deal of it, and I was putting my credibility on the line. But I was prepared to do that because what I was getting back from these people was an absolute tonnage of encouragement, enthusiasm, and support. So yeah. By just sheer talking about a task you want to complete, a project you'd like to do, your big, hairy, audacious goal, by communicating and sharing that with others, you actually get a real spur on. But most people don't, because they're afraid if they don't deliver on the end result.
Yeah, and I think that's it's a great point. We have this, you know, fear of failure or fear of what we might look like. And I think it was the guy who writes the, Scott, I think his name is, the guy who writes the Dilbert cartoons. And he said, there's one bit of advice I'd give you is just lose the whole worry about what people think.
Yeah,
like, great. Just lose it, because the bottom line is they actually don't care anyway in yep. terms of you failing. They want to see you successful. I was picking up yep. from. They want to see you successful. They want to see you actually get there, and they want to help. They want to feel like they've got skin in the game. So when the book does come out, they go, "Hey, I helped you with the cover, or I kept you on count." You know,
yes.
They want to feel part of the journey. You know?
Absolutely, they do. And you know what? We look back at our time at Apple, and Steve did that beautifully for us all.
Yeah.
He brought everybody along for the journey. We all felt we played a role in that end result.
Yeah, it's a great one, Darren. I don't know if you know this, but I've actually got the very first edition of Macworld, right?
And I was rereading it.
And it had this great article by Steve. And what he said in there, I can't believe it's serendipity that I picked this up. And I looked back at it and he said this great point. He said, My role is I'm accountable to my design team, but my role is to shield them from the rest of the organization as it grows. That's my job. My job is to, you know, I'm accountable to them to free them up, to be creative, to get the job done in building the first Mac. This was back in 83, 84.
Yep.
But I'm accountable to them to shield them from the rest of the org. The org I've built, by the way, but I'm growing yep. it, but I want to keep them away from, you know, shareholders and board directors and the rest, to allow them.
Because the freedom and the space.
The space, because he was committed to the big audacious goal, the big hairy, big hairy audacious goal. You know, he and Walls were committed to that big one, and so committed. Now they didn't know what was going to end up. I mean,
they had no idea.
They didn't know at that point how what.
And neither did he. Big. No. Neither did he. He just knew that what they were creating wasn't it.
That's it.
Just keep going, keep working on it until we get it. But right. And that's because everybody didn't question it. Everybody just fell along. They understood the why, they understood the purpose, and off they went marching to the promised land together.
There's so much there, isn't there, Darren? The other one I was reading about the other day was he actually started negotiations with Apple Corps in 1985, I think it was, that he actually went there and said, with Paul McCartney, and said,
yep.
"You know, what are you doing with music and digital?" And Paul McCartney's like, "I don't know what you're talking about."
Yeah, I have
right?
no idea what
but
you're
this
talking
was
about.
Literally, it was 16 years before iTunes came out.
Yeah, crazy.
It was kind of a BHAG that was kind of off the radar. It was off the reservation idea.
Yeah,
but he was like, "You know what? I'm just going to go down and you know, I don't care what people think. I'm going to go and talk to the Beatles about music."
Exactly.
Fascinating, isn't it? And because you have that where you tell people what you're doing. Now he could have sat down there and done nothing and gone, "Oh, maybe I'll talk to them one day."
Yeah, I'll get around to it. But it was important to him.
Yeah.
You know, it was important to him. It was part of his why and his purpose.
Yeah.
And he wanted to make a plan to make that happen.
So I love the fact that, you know, you've got to tell people. And I know you spend a lot of time on that in the book, telling people and how to do it, actually, which I really like. You actually go into how to tell people and how they can help you on the journey, which I think is great, because a lot of people say, look, just, you know, tell the world and the world will vibrate and it'll all happen for you, right?
Doesn't happen
look,
like
look,
that.
It may work like that, but there's a lot more actual work that goes in and strategy. Hey, tell us about the you've got 7 steps to accountability through the book. What are the 7 steps? Top line of the 7 steps.
Sure. No problem at all. So I call it my road to accountability. It was based on a study out of the US, which was conducted in, I think it was 2010. And it looked at the probability of achieving a goal. And what were the probabilities, right? So these are some really interesting statistics. The first one is your probability is 10% if you actually have a goal or an idea to begin with. Which is a good place to start, but we're still way off the end result. Our probability goes to 25% if we consciously decide we're going to do it. So that's like, you know, really, that's now connecting it with your why.
Yep.
You know, that join with the why and your purpose. You'll have a 40% probability if you decide when you will do it. So you set a date for this.
Right.
Going to achieve this by such and such a date. You lock that date in concrete, you cement it in the ground. Your probability goes to 50% if you plan how you're going to do it. So, okay, I need to do this task by this date. This is the steps I'm going to take.
Right.
The probability goes to 65% if you commit to someone, you will do it. Now, whether that's one person or a group of people, like I did, you know, talked about my wanting to write a book at my 50th birthday, that is a great forum to do that. And your probability goes to 95% if you have a specific accountability session with someone you've committed to. So, right. Rob, I'm going to meet you on Thursday to tell you my progress on this. And this stuff works beautifully. Can I give you an example of how I implemented this stuff? So I look at my book here, right, and I wrote this this time last year, and I needed an author photo on the bottom here. And with lockdowns and stuff in Melbourne, I had to book that author photo 6 months out. And my kids, who I'd already outlined earlier that were pretty aggressive and, you know, bringing Dad down a few notches in my 50th birthday speech, said, "Dad, you look like a risshole. You need to lose some weight. That headshot is shocking. You want to use. You need a new headshot." So I thought to myself, the kids are actually right. That's not how I want to present myself. And I had a bit of a COVID belly from being in lockdown two in those days. Mm. So what the plan was that I needed to lose some weight. So I actually had an actual goal or an idea. I'm at 10% probability. I consciously decided I was going to do it because the kids pointed out to me that I didn't look good and I didn't feel good about myself. So I'm at 25%, right? My probability goes to 40% when I decided when I'm going to do it. Now, I needed to book the photographer. I was able to book the photographer in December. So at this time, we're back in June, and I knew that I had, you know, 5-6 months to get there. So I had a date when the photographer was booked because that was the deadline I needed to work towards. So I'm at 40% probability, right? I have 50% probability. I hit that when I plan how I'm going to do it. So this is what I planned, and it's really simple for me. I couldn't go to gym anymore because we're in lockdown, so I bought a little cross trainer and stuck it in the garage, and that worked a treat. I decided, hey, I'm not going to eat bread during the week. Enough of it on weekends, I won't eat the bread. I'll also make sure that I'm watching what I put in my mouth because I'm, you know, middle-aged and I need to really look after myself. So I had a plan on how I was going to do it. Also thought I'd cut out booze and not drink that during the week and just drink that on the weekend. Mm. So I'm at 50% now. 65%, I committed to someone I was going to do it. Now, I was doing a podcast with a dear friend, Andrew Griffiths, called Let's Kick This Bug in the Nuts. And we were doing that this time last year. And we had 1,000 people every week tune in. And I actually told 1,000 people, I'm going to lose weight. I need to lose 10 kilos by this date. And this is how I'm going to do it. And I had people sending me texts going, how are you going with the progress? Have you eaten another burger and all this stuff to kind of stir me up? But I was really committed to that. Yeah. And I had an accountability coach. I had someone I was meeting every week. And we were doing it as a Zoom session because we couldn't meet face-to-face. And it was how much of you, what's the way in? And it was like, shit, I'm taking this seriously and I'm committing to do it. You can see by how I look today, I was successful in losing those 10 kilos. But you can apply my 7 steps to just about anything. Yes, now, there's an example of how you can do it in weight loss.
Yeah, but I love the accountability of that, but also the metrics, wasn't it? It was a metric. Yeah, you know, you said 10 kilograms. You know, it wasn't 15. It wasn't 8. It was 10.
Right? It was 10.
It was 10. And I really like that, being specific on the metric, because it doesn't give you wriggle room for it. And you need to think about it. And it doesn't mean you can't adjust. But I mean, bottom line is you go, you know what, 10s, I'm based on 10. I've got to get to here. And this is how I'm going to do it. And that, when you get that metric, you can break that down, can't you?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing with setting goals, and I talk about, you know, SMART goals in my book, and you know, SMART goals have been around for a long time, and they work. They work really well, and they're simple. You need to be specific with your goal, right? It can't be vague. It's got to be specific. So for me, in that example I just gave, it's 10 kilos. It's measurable. I can stand on the scales and I can prove it. Just like that, I can give you a thumbs up or a thumbs down. It's black and white. Is it attainable? You know, I'm not trying to, I want to be an astronaut and go to the moon without any sort of understanding of flight and physics. This is pretty basic stuff. It needs to be relevant. I mean, here I am motivated. I'm writing my book. I wanted to have a really good author photo because it was connected to my purpose. So it
made sense.
Connected to my heart, 100%. And it needed to be time bound so I could give you a date. I booked the photographer. I wanted to stick that stake in the ground because there was no moving him.
Yeah.
You can't move a photographer in December. You'll never get him back for 3 months.
No, that's right.
So was really important that those things were set. And those SMART goals worked beautifully for that.
Darren, can I just say that you and I actually committed to this and we rehearsed this exact same model, albeit it wasn't actually weight loss back in our days at Apple. I don't know if you recall this, but you and I, as we're young boys going along to a very famous Italian cafe in Chapel Street, and you and I committed and said, you know, one day you and I are going to have our Porsches parked out the front of this place.
Yes.
And we're going to have breakfast like rock stars in there. Do you remember that?
I remember that. We committed to it. I know the cafe.
You know the cafe.
I know
and we
the
committed
cafe.
To doing it, and we ended up at the same time with two Porsches. And I remember, and it was very hard to get a park in front, right?
Yep.
But you and I had held ourselves accountable. I think it was a Friday we're going to do it.
We did.
And we got there. I think we got there at something like 6 a.m. to get the car park space.
It was all about ego. It was connected to our purpose. We were never going to fail that.
It was our why. We just had committed to it for so long. And I remember going through, look at the steps. I mean, it's kind of a bit of fun reflecting back now.
Yep.
But literally, we were committed to it. We didn't even have the cars at the time.
Yep.
But we were committed to the cars. We were committed to being there one day on a Friday. And we were so committed. We got there so early before they even opened up to get the right car park spot.
That's hilarious. You know, it's a funny story along the lines of those cars. But you used to live around the corner from my kid's school. And
yes.
One of the school teachers said to me, oh, there's a guy you spoke to in a Porsche out the front. Does everybody, and I said, oh, yeah, he works with me at Apple. We work together. And she said, oh, does everybody at Apple have Porsches? And I thought to myself, actually, most of us in our office did.
That's right.
the arrogance of the era.
They were good times, though, Darren. They were good
they were
times.
Good times.
We did actually flog those cars pretty hard. They weren't show ponies, I can tell you that much.
No, they were very good. But
certainly our leader, our great leader, Simon Froude, was probably going to listen to this at some point. He certainly set the standards for us, and he was certainly a very, very quick driver anywhere. In fact,
he was very, very quick. Too quick. I never liked being a passenger, if I was perfectly honest.
I had the pleasure of going around Sandown with him, and I'm glad I bought three pairs of shorts. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. Hey, Darren, a couple of things. What's been your most fulfilling role? Because you've had a lot of stuff you've done. What's your most fulfilling role?
Yeah. Look, you know, every role I've had is kind of, I've likened to being an audition for the next role. Even though I wasn't particularly auditioning, of course, you know, Apple offered a really special time. There was no question about that, that working as part of that team in that era is wonderful. And I can tell you now, people still want to ask me questions about Apple 20-odd years later.
Yes.
You know, and then I went and had my own entrepreneurial journey, and I ran that successful boat, a dealership, which boating was my passion. I turned a passion into a business. We grew it from, you know, a couple of people into a team of 15, a couple of offices, and you know, and so that brought a really lovely lifestyle connection, you know, wearing shorts to work, boat shorts, and play with boats every day and trying to explain to people, this is my business. It's not just fun. That was pretty special. But there is actually something at the stage I'm at now in my life where I've got runs on the board. I've walked the talk. I've experienced both the highs and the lows. It hasn't always been a bed of roses. To be able to share that and mentor other business owners on their journey ahead is actually the most pleasurable thing there is.
To
be able to give back and, you know, share some of the reasons why I've got some grey hair and a lesser head of hair than I had 20-odd years ago.
That's right.
But to be able to give back and show someone else so they can make their own journey and they can walk in the path and create their own path is really special.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Hey, if you and I got in the time machine and we went beyond Apple, we were right back to, and we caught up with 15-year-old Darren, what words of wisdom would you have for him?
Oh, yeah, good question, Rob. Really good question. There's two parts to this question. First one is build relationships. Oh, my lordy, the best thing you can come out of school with is a decent handshake and some connections with people. And look at people in the eye and build long-term stuff. It's not short-term, not what's in it for me. It's what we can do together. So build relationships, and whatever you do, do it with passion. No one wants to do business with a miserable, bloody, beaten down
whinger.
No one wants that. Passion and energy is what will get you through.
Yeah, fantastic. Hey, look, how can more people find out about the book, the accountability book, the Accountability Advantage, which is the great book you've got, and
Thanks.
Also Tick Those Boxes, and more about Darren Finkelstein? Where do they go?
Yeah, sure. So the best place to go to is tickthoseboxes.com.au. On my website there, you'll find links to be able to buy the book. And you can also look for that advertisement there. Are you accountable? And do the quiz. It's free. You'll get a 19-page report back from me. It will show you whether you're actually accountable or you're not. We rate you against other individuals. So it's free. It's a good way to find out what the reality is from the dream.
Yeah, fantastic, Darren. Hey, look, it's been awesome to catch up with you again, my friend. It's been too long. Look forward to catching up again, keeping ourselves both accountable as we
Absolutely.
Go forward. But thanks for being on the show today.
Mate, it's a pleasure. Lovely to catch up with you. And mate, thank you for your time.
Thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoyed this episode of the It's All Possible podcast. Please subscribe and rate the podcast you listen to so we can continue to serve you and inspire others. Remember, connect to us on all the social media channels. The It's All Possible podcast is hosted by me, Rob Hartnett, and produced by the phenomena that is Finn Hartnett. Connect with us via LinkedIn, Instagram, or the link tree in the show notes.